It is my great pleasure, and I'm a little nervous, to bring on a performer, songwriter, composer, author, pilot, and educator all wrapped into one, Mr. Livingston Taylor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Rick. Great to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you, man. It's unbelievable.
Thanks for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. This is so awesome. First of all, I want to get started by asking you, have you been to Shaylin Lu before in Rockport? Have you played up there before?
I have played at Shaylin Lu, five or so times. It's arguably the best, the most remarkable venue that I work in. It's the acoustics are unbelievable, and to look out across Rockport Harbor when they open those curtains, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a truly remarkable venue.
Well, you know, for you to say that is incredible. It's a spectacular place, and we, of course, on the North Shore, think we're pretty proud of it. But to hear someone of your ilk mention that's fantastic. The other thing I think about the place, it's for a concert hall of that size, it's pretty intimate in it, and I gather that makes you comfortable when you're there.
Well, I love the intimacy of it. I love the fact that there are some technical aspects to the space, meaning it's as I mentioned, it's beautiful acoustically, mm-hmm. and it's just a magical place to be. And one of the things that's very important in a performance space is ambient noise. And that place is just as quiet as it could humanly be.
You don't hear any air conditioning or stuff like that, I presume.
No. And when you have the white noise of air handling, that's a fatal pollution to a performance space. And at the Shaylin Lu, they knew about it, and they spent money to get it right.
Livingston Taylor will be in Rockport at the Shaylin Lu on 2 weeks from today, as a matter of fact, at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Thursday and Friday, and I want to get to that in a little while. But first, a little bit about your background, because you come from one of the most famous musical families in the country, and you settled in the area, you teach in the area, and tell us a little bit about how you got where you are.
Well, I came from North Carolina. I was born in Boston. As was my family, with the exception of our youngest brother, Hugh. He was born in North Carolina. But the rest of us were born in Boston. My father and mother met when my father was at Harvard Medical School, and then he did his residency at MGH. So we were in the area for a while. Then we all moved down to North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where ultimately my father was the dean of the medical school at University of North Carolina. And then I came back to Boston to finish up high school. And I got through high school, and I was making music at the time, of course, but I started going out and playing professionally. And as the result of a favorable celestial alignment, I did well, and so I rented a house in Watertown, and I was playing shows and making records, and just developed a career, and just stayed in the Boston area. Then in 1989, I started teaching at the Berklee College of Music, and I started teaching a course called Performance. Stage performance and how to be on stage, how to hone those skills, and here we are all these years later, and it's still trundling along.
I think it's just amazing, and I'm looking at your schedule, and the fact that you still have the fire in the belly is outstanding. You still have that little boy in you, that little enthusiasm of when you were a kid about doing this, getting out on stage, and and playing the music that you love and that you create.
It is such a miracle to be able to make music to that to be able to play the guitar, to stand up on that stage and see my beautiful audience. I need them so much, as I'm fond of saying to my nervous students. Remember, the audience isn't your problem. They're your salvation.
I love it. I love it. You know, it's amazing to me, the gratification that you can get in being a creator, you know, of an art. Whereas I'm guessing, I don't know how it works. I'm a former educator. I taught math for 38 years, and sometimes I don't know if I've done a good job or not. Sometimes I just don't know. But when you write something, when you perform something, when you create something, do you not get immediately a sense of goodness, a sense of self-gratification maybe?
Well, there's a great joy in the creative process, but whether the thing you created is of any value is subject to a lot of externals, as Abraham Lincoln so beautifully said, a spark still has to find a dry field. So if you create something and the stars aren't aligned, then there's no dry field, and it goes out. Sometimes the creation is so good that it finds a dry field. But generally, it's a combination of many ingredients.
When you perform, when you, say, pick a venue such as Rockport, and you decide what songs you're going to play, how does that process play out?
Very good question. I don't have a set list, per se. I have in mind different things that I want to do, but I'm monitoring where I am and where my audience is, how I'm feeling, where my voice is, what notes can I hit, can I not hit, is the audience, is the set dragging, is it, has it become so amped up that I need to bring it down a little bit and then rebuild it? It's all a process of not dissimilar to painting a picture, where you've got a lot of colors on a palette, and you choose those colors given what's already there in the environment that you're in and how you're feeling. So it's a function. It looks like it's sort of made up on the spot, and it is somewhat, but the all parts are very practiced.
Along those same lines, a question I have as a fan of music is, and I guess I don't know if there's an answer, but does mood influence music, or does music influence mood, or does it just depend on the time of day?
It just depends on the time of day. Nothing is a greater motivator than imminent starvation. people who are creators for a living, who are writing songs, if you have another option, you do it. If it's, I'm going to be a songwriter or a brain surgeon, the fact is that you generally choose brain surgery. If you're a, it's one of the things that makes the competition so acute, is that most people who are doing it at a high level are doing it at a survival level. It wasn't this or being the CEO of Apple. Mm-hmm. It was this or the LaSalle Academy of Electric Fan Repair. There weren't a lot of options.
Well, did that create, in your life, in your personal life, did that create some pretty tense moments at times?
Sure, I think that it does. But as I'm fond of saying to my students, what makes you good is not anything I'm going to teach you in this class. What makes you good is you and four of your friends competing for the same job. And when one of them gets the job that you wanted, you congratulate them because you're a friend and you're gracious. And then you walk back to your bedroom. You look at yourself in the mirror and you promise to whatever deity will listen, that you will never feel this way again.
I had a friend give me similar advice, and that is that's absolutely profound. Absolutely profound.
And you, and that's what makes you go to work until your fingers bleed.
What are some of the great pleasures of your creations, Livingston, if I could ask you that, whether it be a book, a song, a poet, a poetry, or whatever?
Well, one of the wonderful things that I get to do is, for instance, I wrote this a little lullaby for my mother as she was approaching her passing. And I wrote a little song called Sleepy Is Good. And when I play that song, people think about their parents or people that they've lost or parents that are now in a compromised place. And they cry like babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I love holding people so tightly that now they're free to cry. It never gets better than that.
You hit home. We're going through that with a relative right now, my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Let me go back a ways, if I may, and I want to go back to a song that just jumped off the pages at me when I looked at the lyrics, and it's a song called Kitty Hawk, which ties in to me, obviously, your North Carolina ties, and I wanted to ask you about your being instrument-rated, because I love flying myself, and didn't do so well with lessons, had a hard time landing the plane, but at the very end of it, the lyrics, you talk about two earnest, quiet men with their sister Catherine, the adventure did begin. With the hubris that was the time they looked up and they saw the triad that became flight, pitch, roll, and yaw. Does that describe your early relationship with your siblings?
I don't know. I hadn't let it there. It was a pretty direct reference to the Wright brothers and the fact that they patented not the airplane, but the three axes of flight,
right.
Pitch, roll, and yaw. And so the answer is... I realistically, I'm embarrassed to tell you that I don't think it through terribly much further than sort of what's on the page in front of me. It perhaps has a deeper meaning, but if it has that meaning, or you want to interpret it that way, I'm delighted with that.
I think that's
what I'm always careful to do is not explain my lyrics, and the reason why is that if I explain what they are, I learned long ago that if I explain a lyric somebody has a different vision of the lyric, they're always profoundly disappointed at my banal explanation.
not at all. And I love it because music is both personal and universal. I mean, you know, you wrote something that's descriptive, but I take that thing right to heart. And in flying, to me, it's you've just written, you know, for me, that's a life story. Attitude is as important as altitude in flying. So the pitch roll, I love it. I absolutely love it. Listen, in your career, technology has changed, obviously, and when you teach performance and so on, how has that changed in your career, the use of technology? Because obviously, I don't have to go out and buy a 45, a 33 and a third, or a cassette tape of yours anymore. I can just download it right now as I sit talking to you.
Yes. I think that what the Internet has done to all of society is that it so disrupted the distribution channels that we had depended on to focus an income stream. And what existed before the Internet were distribution channels, record distribution channels, that allowed the presence of gatekeepers, allowed people with either arrogance or hubris or vision or whatever the traits they had, and generally a combination of those, to say this is good and this isn't good,
mm-hmm.
or this is potentially good and you need to work harder. What happens is that the Internet eviscerated revenue streams, and the a truth that I believe is that great art is the result of wealth concentrating talent. And what happened was when we eviscerated the revenue stream, we still had the talent, but we had no gatekeeper to concentrate that talent. And this left us in a this leaves us in a very tough spot, because there's no one to moderate. There's no one to say, no, you can't print this article, or you can't print this post or this blog or this whatever it is. The heads of the record companies, the editors, the publishers, the gatekeepers have been eviscerated. And again, great art is the result of wealth concentrating talent. And without that concentration, it's very difficult to find gold in the vast wash of gravel.
Wow! I didn't realize that, and it certainly makes sense. It makes it easier for the rest. But on the other hand, I agree with you. I've seen so many performers now who have been marketed by some of the big companies, and they can't even sing live, and it's very disturbing that.
Again, one of the things that you can control is, because you can't control the recording, because that goes out and is infinitely transferable instantly and everywhere, mm-hmm. What you can control is you can control the video image. And so what happens is that music becomes simply a soundtrack for a video image. So you have an artist like Taylor Swift is a prime example, who makes a lovely, functional record, but nobody would argue that the music that she's making is as innovative as Steely Dan was in the 80s. Nobody would argue that point, or would argue the point that Taylor Swift's music is as innovative as, for example, Queen in the 70s, when you just heard it and it exploded at you.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, so Taylor Swift, again, who I feel very positively about, I admire her career and her tremendously, but she is this is a video image.
Mm-hmm.
This is a video image with a soundtrack. This isn't
exactly
an innovative musical experience.
Exactly. And the dancing, you know, I can do without. I want to go to listen to the music, which is certainly...
Well, again, I love the dancing. I love what these artists are doing. But these are video.
Mm-hmm.
These you can control and get an income stream off the video. And you can't control the music. So the video makes it possible for you to then market a clothing line, to show up
yep.
at Gillette Stadium
yep.
to do those sorts of things.
Well, now, I'm looking at your schedule, and wow, I mean, you're on the road a lot.
By the way, I'm sorry, let me interrupt you.
Of course.
One moment, I'm so embarrassed, and I must ask again your name, because it slipped out of my mind.
That's not a problem. My name is Rick. It's Rick Moore, and
Mr. Moore, I'm sorry, Rick. You'll excuse my vacant brain, but Mr. Moore, thanks for re-reminding me.
Okay.
It had fallen away, and I thought, oh, no, I must know. All right, back to the question.
Well, back to the question. Your schedule, you're all over the place in the next couple of months. You're traveling to Japan, according to your website, and your venues. I mean, you go from a private function to an amphitheater, and you've been traveling for quite a while now, so tell us a little bit about the experience and where you're headed after Rockport. Because, again, for our listeners, Livingston Taylor will be in Rockport 2 weeks from today as we record this on August 25 and August 26. But your upcoming schedule, some of the travels you'll be doing.
As you mentioned, I'll be going to Japan And then I have to look at, I'm looking at my calendar, and then I'm going Northern Kentucky, Pittsburgh, PA, Lewisburg, PA, Asheville, North Carolina, to play a judges conference. I'm doing a Pops show with the Albany Symphony at College of St. Rose's in Albany. It's those types of shows. Not perhaps the most exciting travel, but I can tell you that I am looking very much forward, as usual, to seeing my beautiful audience. Also, be advised, when I'm talking about coming and working at the Shaylin Lou, Rick, that's an audience that I'm going to see there, and we're talking about that show, and we're doing some promotion for that show. I'm very mindful not you're on a date with one person. I'm not that enthusiastic with talking about my date with another person.
Okay, I get it.
As far as I'm concerned, there's one show in the world when I'm talking with you, and that's my joy at showing up at the Shaylin Lou.
Then let's just focus on that finally here. Are there songs when you play, say, a Shaylin Lou or any other place for that matter, but are there songs that the audience wants and you know they want, but it surprises you that might be a favorite of theirs, or is it pretty consistent you pretty much know what the audience wants?
Well, it's complicated because I love playing what the audience wants, and I do that. I go into my old catalog and do a Carolina Day, or in my reply, a little bit of Lost in Love of You. These titles from 40 years ago. But of course, what I'm excited about is what I'm in the middle of now. So I try to walk that balance, and I hopefully am successful at it. And yep. That's
all right. What are we promoting now then? What is the most recent?
My most recent record is called Blue Sky. Blue Sky. And it's a record that I recorded that was co-produced by a young fella named Charlie Puth, who was a former student of mine, and he's now become a huge pop star, but he was at the Berklee College of Music and went through both my classes, and I recognized his production skills and glonged onto him right away.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Blue Sky. Now, the website for Livingston Taylor is called livtaylor.com, and can we can get your music right off the website?
I'll tell you one thing you can do is you can flat find Livingston Taylor on the internet.
Oh yeah, yes indeed.
I'm as easy to find as a hole in your shirt.
All right, Mr. Taylor. I know that I've taken time out of your busy schedule today. Looking forward to the concert in 2 weeks. Anything else that you'd like to tell to your audience members?
Not a thing, Rick, except how much I've enjoyed this interview. Really well done, my friend.
Oh, thank you, sir. I've been a nervous wreck, but I really appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and God bless you and good luck.
Hey, thanks, Rick. We'll speak soon.
Take care. Livingston Taylor, my guest this morning on MSONewsports.com.